Warning, The Michael Savage Show contains adult language, adult content, psychological nudity. Listener discretion is advised.
And now, America's most exciting radio talk show, The Savage Nation. Here is Michael Savage.
It is the Savage Nation, Rock and Roll Friday, which means whatever you want it to mean. It's your show. It's open mic to mic Friday. There's been big news this week, today. Facebook, I'm calling Facebook Red Facebook because the fact of the matter is it came out and didn't go up because everybody who wanted to buy it bought it and there's no one left in line. That's the end of the story. So remember now, you heard it first in the Savage Nation, Red Facebook. That's all. It'll be ripped off before the show is in the next minute. We've done a Savage epidemiological survey about Viagra, and I determined that the blue pill mainly goes to the blue states. Now, how did I discover that? I discovered it because I only know conservatives. I don't actually know any liberals. And none of the conservatives that I know have ever used the pill. At least they say they haven't. So I can only assume that the blue pill only goes to the blue states. It's an astonishing fact when you consider that millions and millions and millions of these pills are sold every day and no one's ever used them. Never met anybody who used them. Again, it's open mic to Mike Friday. I'm going to open with a review that just came out minutes ago from the Financial Times in the UK by Daniel Ben-Ami. I don't know who he is. I don't know if he's related to Bonami, the cleaner, the cleanser. But apparently there's a man named Daniel Ben-Ami, and he writes for the Wall Street Journal equivalent of England, the Financial Times. The ownership is the same that owns the Internationalist Leftist Economist. I used to read The Economist when I was young and impressionable and thought I was very intelligent for reading it. The same way some people used to walk around with the New York Times on the New York subways to show they were a cut above the daily news readers. But the fact of the matter is, the review is interesting because if it's an attempt to, the guy tries to smear me, and yet he praises me. He doesn't quite know what to make of me. So let me read the review. Trickle Down Tyranny came out a little while ago, Financial Times, by Daniel Ben-Ami, not related to the sink cleanser. He writes this. It is hard to suppress a frisson of excitement. I like that word. That's very liberal, a frisson of excitement. That's sort of like a frappuccino, a cappuccino, a macchiato. You have to drink these drinks to know what a frisson of excitement is. So he writes, it's hard to suppress a frisson of excitement associated with doing something illicit when opening Trickle-Down Tyranny. Successive British governments have banned its author, Michael Savage, from entering the country on the grounds that he preaches hate. This is despite the fact that the American authorities have never prosecuted the conservative for such an offense in his home country. Certainly does not take long to see that Trickle-Down Tyranny is no classic. It does not stand alongside The Adventures of Huckleberry Finn, The Color Purple, or The Grapes of Wrath, even though all have suffered censorship in the past. Let me pause right there. He makes no sense. Yes, those books were censored, but none of the authors were banned from entering England, Mr. Ben-Ami. I don't understand what your point is. Well, he goes on. It is also clear that Savage's views are deeply controversial. He is passionately hostile to Islam. Pause. You're wrong. I'm hostile to Islamists. I guess you got that wrong in order to go along with your vermin and your governments who are trying to smear me, Mr. Ben-Ami. You ought to stick to sink cleansers instead of writing reviews. Savage argues that America should not have supported the overthrow of Egypt's President Hosni Mubarak. Yes, sir, I'm opposed to the overthrow of Egypt's President Hosni Mubarak, moron, because he was our best friend in the Middle East for 35 years, idiot. And you're going to compare him to the Islamists? What world do these British writers live in? Savage also argues that America should not have supported the overthrow of Egypt's President Mubarak and rejects the view that climate change is a problem. Unbelievable. I never rejected that climate change is a problem. I just said that man is not causing it, schmuck. We all know that this is a hype put out by friends of yours, like Al Gore, to push green technologies so people can make billions of dollars, Mr. Bonamy. You should know that from all the years in the sink cleaning business. He then goes on to say whether such views should be suppressed is a different matter. The case for banning Savage rests on the assumption that potential readers are so feeble that contact with his ideas can make them commit violence. In any case, reading the work of Savage and his ilk can help put broader social developments into context, says this Mr. Bonamy. Now, here comes the best line of the review. I love this line. He writes, reading Trickle-Down Tyranny is much like watching a grainy, black-and-white documentary from about 1950. His hysterical anti-communism is reminiscent of the Cold War at its McCarthyite peak. Let me pause right here, Mr. Bonamy. The fact of the matter is, if you knew anything about what you were writing, you would know that the Venona Papers, published about 12 years ago, confirmed that McCarthy was right, that the communists had penetrated the U.S. government, had penetrated the U.S. media, and McCarthy is an American hero, sir. He goes on. He says, but the twist is that Savage is talking about today, not then. In Savage's schema, Barack Obama is the new Lenin. This is not a rhetorical flourish, but a central theme of his work. The quote, and then he quotes me. Here's the quote. Tell me if you agree with my quote. Quote, the Obama administration's intent is to weaken our economy, to further a crisis of the international financial system, and facilitate its takeover by a U.S. global financial elite on the scale of the Leninist takeover of the Russian economy, close quote. I still believe it's true. Then he goes on. Here he gets into the interesting part of his paranoia and insanity. In many respects, Savage's thesis is reminiscent of traditional anti-Semitic conspiracy theories. How he goes from that to anti-Semitism is beyond me, but being British, I would not expect much logic left in their minds. Once they try to ban you, they try to destroy you. He sketches a world in which the American president is simply a puppet of international financiers intent on imposing a world government. George Soros and Goldman Sachs are particular targets for Savage's ire. To be fair to Savage, he emphasizes he is staunchly opposed to anti-Semitism itself. He is also an uncompromising defender of the state of Israel. He leaves that hanging like that's a bad thing. Of course, to Brits, that's a very bad thing. If you're an uncompromising defender of the state of Israel and you're in Britain, in the elite, you are a Nazi. There is no talk in his work of any compromise with the Palestinians. He goes on, at the center of trickle-down tyranny, therefore, is a conspiracy theory in which the wealthy and financiers, in particular, are duping ordinary Americans. Time and again, Savage emphasizes the huge gap between Wall Street, along with its corrupt allies and regular citizens. Readers who instinctively react against Savage's ultra-conservatism would do well to pause here. Strip out the archaic anti-Marxist rhetoric, put aside his more controversial positions, and the thrust of Savage's conspiratorial thesis is widely accepted across the political spectrum. Now, let me pause right here. That's one of the most convoluted sentences I've ever read in my entire life. Strip out the archaic anti-Marxist rhetoric. Why is it archaic if we have a Marxist president? I don't see where the archaic part comes in. And the thrust of Savage's conspiratorial thesis is widely accepted across the political spectrum. So that means I'm right. To most people, I'm right. He then goes on to say there is a pervasive sense among American citizens of all stripes that they are detached from the nation's rulers. Do you agree or disagree with that? Of course you agree with that. The gap is perceived to be both social and economic. This theme is as central to the Tea Party as it is to Occupy Wall Street. And then he compares my book to a guy who wrote for on the leftist side, which was praised. Yet, in essence, Savage's argument is the same as other guy, even though I'm derided and he isn't, because I'm a right-winger and he isn't. Both see Wall Street parasites sucking the blood out of contemporary America. Nor are such views confined to either end of the political spectrum. Polling by the Pew Research Center, a so-called nonpartisan organization based in Washington, D.C., it's not a nonpartisan, it's a radical leftist research center, by the way, shows a very large majority of Americans agree with the statement that in the U.S., the rich get richer and the poor get poorer. Of course they agree with it. It's always been true. My mother told me that's how the world worked. She said as you get older, you'll find out the rich get richer and the poor get poorer. Nothing's ever changed, sir. A parallel trend it found was for governments to be seen as catering to the rich and powerful. No kidding. No, they cater to the poor. Can you tell me which government ever has catered to anything but the rich and powerful, nor why they should? Why should they cater to the poor and stupid? This gulf between a wealthy elite and the rest needs urgent public debate. Dismissing it as a matter to be handled by politicians only reinforces the pervasive sense of social disengagement. No doubt many will prefer to ignore the warning signs or even shut down debate completely, as it is too uncomfortable. Such a failure to tackle the issue can only stir up an even stronger sense of resentment for the future. That's the book review on Trickle-Down Tyranny from the prestigious Financial Times by Daniel Ben-Ami, so far as I know, not related to the toilet bowl cleaner, Bonami. 1-800-4-4-4. Please call me on this if you want to call on anything, or else I'm just going to play another rock and roll song while you... Did anyone hear the review? I read all of that, burnt out my voice, and you don't care about it. So I'm going to pick another rock and roll song. Oh, Shaboom by the Chords. I want to hear Shaboom. Oh, a-lang-a-lang-a-lang. Oh, life could be a dream. Life could be a dream, sweetheart. Shaboom. Oh, come on, man. Hit the switch already. He's looking for, he's searching in the archives. SH-Boom by the Chords on the Savage Nation while my listeners are reaching for another cup of coffee. Turns out coffee is good for your health. You see the latest epidemiological study? Yeah, I linked it up on michaelsavage.com. We always knew this. I learned it when I was in graduate school. Of course, they call me a shock jock. Two have masters and a PhD, and 28 weeks later, still a shock jock.
Oh, life could be a dream if I could take you up in paradise up above. If you would tell me I'm the only one that you love.
Hey, Mike, can you tell me how I can maintain the male segment of my body? Mike, can you give me a tip on growing my hair? Mike, I don't want to hear any more reviews. Those sentences were too long, Mike. The words were too big. Some of them were more than two syllables. I don't know how to listen to that, Mike. You don't sound like the other talk show hosts. Those are big words, Mike.
If you do what I want you to,
baby, we'd be so far.
Oh, life could be a dream if I could take you up in paradise.
All right, turn off the song already. That's a bomb, too. Here's an interesting soundbite. Let's get down to the meat and potatoes. Okay, here we go, meat and potatoes. Hillary says government should not control life. Now, this is an odd statement from Hillary, since her whole life has been that of a, just like Obama, controlling us from cradle to grave. Let's put it that way. Hillary believes in big government. I dare not say Marxism or Leninism for fear that the Financial Times will have another conniption. But here's Hillary pretending that she's suddenly a free marketeer and concerned about the individual. Listen to clip one.
Government cannot and should not control any individual's life, tell you what to do, what not to do.
No.
The economy... Uh-huh. has to be in the hands of those who are the entrepreneurs uh-huh. and the uh-huh. creative innovators.
Oh, my God. Now, why did Hillary suddenly find religion? How did she find the religion of free market economics? I don't understand this. What happened to her? How did she find this? I don't understand this. Here's a woman who has tried to control individuals' lives from the time she became a politician or a politician's wife. She says the government shouldn't tell you what to do and not to do. Why do you think Hillary is giving a speech like this right now? Answer. Because it looks to me like she's getting ready for a run against Obama in a primary. I'll be right back.
Savage.
Who was Mr. Lee? And what did he have that the girls went wild for him? I don't know. I always wondered who Mr. Lee was. Anyway, it's Rock and Roll Friday. I read you a very heavy-duty schizophrenic review from the Financial Times. And I know that most people didn't want to hear it because the words were too long. The sentences were too convoluted and complicated. So I know what callers I'm going to really get on the Savage Nation. This is what shock jocks should get, things like...
hey, Mike, I'm going to make some meatloaf this weekend, and if I put some breadcrumbs in it, am I becoming a liberal by cheating on my guests by putting some bread into the meatloaf? Yeah, why don't you ask me questions like that? That would really make my day. You know what I mean? Master's degrees, PhD, travel the world, look for the answer. I'll answer questions about breadcrumbs and meatloaf. That'd be great. Why not? What the heck? You got to please your audience. Here's an interesting article to confirm that we have a Marxist regime in the White House. It's actually a Marxist gangster regime on the order of Fidel Castro. Headline: Skechers deceived consumers with shoe ads, and the government is forcing the shoe company Skechers to pay $40 million to settle government charges over its claim that fitness shoes tone muscles. Now, you say, well, what's wrong with this picture? A small amount of the settlement would be used to administer the payouts. That means the gangster regime in the Federal Trade Commission will be paying their pensions and salaries with money they stole from the Skechers shoe company. It's astounding to me how you don't see the gangsterism and the Castro-like behavior of this government. Skechers deceive consumers with shoe ads. Ads are all deceptive. So what'd they pick on Skechers for? Listen, I have no stock in the company. I've worn their shoes from time to time. This is a clear example of the Marxist nature of this government and the gangster nature of this government. I can name some other corporations that should be sued instead of Skechers. Let's start with corporations that I name in trickle-down tyranny who have paid no income taxes for the last few years. You want to hear a few of them? I name them. I've told you their names. Why are they not sued? Answer: they're bundlers for Obama. So I rest my case. I know what I'm talking about. Do you know what I'm talking about? Florida, Ron, I'm almost out of time. Fire away. You're on the Savage Nation.
Yeah, hi, first-time caller. I enjoy listening to your show. About the editorial from that Brit, you know, they're so controlled by the Muslims that they deny everything. Yeah,
they are. The British government is terrified of the Islamic presence in England. There are rumors, by the way, that there's a little more to the picture than meets the eye, sort of inside the royal chambers.
Savage.
One, two, 3 o'clock, three, 4 o'clock, rock. 5, 6, 7 o'clock, 8 o'clock, rock. 9, 10, 11 o'clock, 12 o'clock, rock. We're gonna rock around the clock tonight. Put your glad rags on.
What a country it was when Bill Haley was alive singing this. What a great country. What a great country it was. I don't know. It just was a great nation. Just felt great. Your mother could walk to the grocery store without being molested. There were no molester vans rolling around. In other words, if there was one, the cops would stop it, pull the inhabitants out, beat them up with a nightclub, and put them into a jail cell knowing they were up to no good. I mean, if a guy driving around with earrings on, with tattoos, it's just to start with. There were no milk cartons with children on it because they stopped them before they took the children. You know what I'm saying? Ah, what's the point of telling you any of this? You don't even know what America should be. You think it should be a cesspool of the third world. You know, the lowest common denominator shouldn't rule every country that it invades, by the way. In the old days, people would come to this country to become Americans, not to drag us back into the cesspool that they came from. That's what I see. That's how I see it. Take a look at the vermin lawyers. You see how the Skechers thing started? Alaska got $71,000 in Skechers settlement. Vermont gets $70,000. Virginia, $715,000. Maine, $75,000. Look at these criminals. Now, who started this? Skechers USA Investor Alert. The Briscoe Law Firm and Powers Taylor LLP announced investigation of Skechers USA. Law firm of Levy and Korsinski launches an investigation. Holzer and Fistel LLC announces So these vermin lawyers, these rats, these class action thieves and crooks and rats. If I were president, I would arrest every class action lawyer in America. I'd seize all their assets going down to the third generation, and I'd take their children out of school and make them clean toilets in Mexico for what they've done to this country. How do you like that? Did I express myself clearly to you? Class action lawyers are the worst gangsters and the worst criminals in American history. The worst. They take a legitimate business and they parasitize it. like a virus that invades a body, like a retrovirus. And again, I have no stock in Skechers, but this is why businesses are dying. Every ad is deceptive. But why does the government go after some companies and not others? Apparently, they didn't give enough money. They didn't kick enough money up to the commander-in-chief. I cannot believe this. You mean you really believed if you bought a shoe you were going to lose weight? Who would believe that? Well, anyway, I don't even want to. Don't call me about Skechers. Let's go to the callers now on the book thing. I'm distracted. Play another rock and roll while I'm looking for a story to talk about. What time is it?
Yeah.
Can we just play this? No. Okay.
Maybelline. Why can't you
turn off Maybelline? I don't want to hear it. I'll tell you what I want to hear. You know this one I want to hear? The one with the shabup shabup. Where's the shabup shabup song? How does that go? I'll tell old stories. That's all anyone wants to hear anyway. Mike, tell us some stories about when you were a kid. Tell us about riding in the Plymouth Fury when there was a car wreck on Highway 42 in South Fallsburg. Mike, tell us about the comedian who got thrown in the pool with his clothes on, Mike. This is a great song. What is this song called? I Only Have Eyes for You. I love this song. Love by the Sewer Plant was written at the time the song was out. Young Love, Love by the Sewer Plant. Remember what love was? Can you imagine? What happens to a human being when they lose love? They become a Democrat? You know, when all hope dies and all dreams die, you know what? You become a Democrat. Because then you could hate everybody for having stolen your dreams. You just got old, that's all. How can you go around like you're 17 when you're 70? You can't. Or when you're 37. You become a mean, nasty liberal. So when this song was out, I had a 59, 58, right? That period, the car. I like to watch Meekum auctions at night now. I can't take movies anymore. They're so violent and disgusting. I watched one last night. I couldn't sleep all night. A guy cut up a family. I don't know how it could be made. But then it's Robert Redford's channel. What do you expect from him? Right? I said to myself, no one's forcing you to watch it. No one's making you watch him invade a house and tie people to a chair with duct tape and kill them. Guy with tattoos and, you know, like earrings. Scum. So I turned it off. So I switched to Meekum Auctions. I had the junk people buy. They paid $180,000 last night for a 63 split window Corvette, a black one. $180,000 for a 63 Corvette? How could anyone want a car like that? You know what you could buy for $180,000 in a car today? Why would anyone want that car? I don't get it. They stink. I have a 65 Caddy. The most I would ever expect to get for it would be $95, $100 because I owned it. Otherwise, it would be worth about $14. But so I watched car shows. And there's a guy who does a show called Chasing Classics. I don't like him particularly, but I like the cars. I like that show that's on HDTV. I'm trying to, like, watch gentle shows at night. I can't watch a nature show. Every nature show, my heart breaks. In the Arctic, the tern is left in the cold. Her babies are dying in the ice. She goes out 65,000 miles into the sea to find a fish. And while she is away, the pelicans try to eat her children, her little chicks, as they're chirping away in the Arctic ice. The father tern or the mother tern is swimming across the sea, trying to get a little anchovy to bring back to the babies. Then they show her coming back, evading 50,000 different animals. She comes back up onto the ice. And the babies are gone. Oh, how can you take this? How can you take it? Last night I watched the hatching of sea turtles. I couldn't take another minute. It was worse than a slasher movie. The poor turtle comes out of the water. It travels 1,500 miles from South America to Ascension Island to lay an egg. A little egg it lays. It does this every year. It goes 1,500 miles to one little island. And then what happens? Just about the time, I think, 6 weeks later when the hatchlings come out, here come the pelicans. Here come all the birds of prey, and they're sitting there in droves waiting for the little turtle hatchlings to appear out of the sand. And before the creatures could even crawl 5 feet, they grab them and gobble them down. 1 out of 100 makes it back into the sea. Is it any wonder that I'm an animal rights activist and lover, why I give money to various and sundry? It's about the only thing worth living for lately is animals. But you can't upset the order of nature. What are you going to do? Interfere with the pelican eating the turtle hatchling? Then what? Then the pelicans die. It's a very delicate balance. And you can't really interfere with the balance, truthfully. It's very difficult to do without destroying another species. It's, you know what it comes down to? It's dog-eat-dog. It's survival of the fittest. It's the nature of nature. There's nothing you could do about it. That doesn't mean that you have to go ahead with the wholesale slaughter or that you should be cruel to animals. That's a whole different story. But it's interesting to me that in the order of nature, you've got the survival of the fittest and you got dog-eat-dog. And yet here in the West, we treat our dogs, and myself included, better than most people treat their children in the third world. We buy them outfits. They have better medical care than a kid does in most third world countries. Better diets, better food, exercise. They sleep in beds with us. How did that happen? I mean, you just think about this. What's become a norm to us, look at all the white girls in New York City, for example, walking with a dog and no children. Is that normal? It's the normal thing for a society in decay, yes, for girls in their 30s to have a dog instead of a child. I'm not putting the girl down. The boys are the reason. The boys are afraid of women, and they're not willing to commit to be a father because it's the very hardest job a man can do is be a father. There's no harder job. Anyone could be a father if you want to father a child. That's nothing. I'm talking about sticking it out, raising children. Hardest job on earth. It's what a man is supposed to do. Every culture knows that. That's why the Hispanic community is so such a forceful, vehemently family culture, because the men are macho. And they know that to be macho, you're supposed to stick it out and raise your children. You understand what I just said to you? But you look at the poor white girls in this country, say, oh, the demographics have changed, and 50% of all kids being born are non-Caucasian. Well, there's a reason for it. The men have wimped out. They only live for pleasure. And the girls now wind up with a dog in the street. You think they want to be with a dog? I doubt it. I don't know. Maybe they do. Maybe I'm wrong. Maybe they're copying the sluts of Hollywood. What do I know? I mean, the sewer pipe of Hollywood is so pervasive. When you consider what Katzenberg, Matzenberg, and Spielberg have done to the American mind, the vermin in Hollywood, the Hollywood idiots, what they've done to the mind of America is something you can hardly comprehend. I would blame them for all of the problems in society from the images that they put out. There's no salvation. There's no saving grace. There's no nobility in any of the movies that these fallen people make. They're the worst of the worst. That's why they're so rich. The lower you are, the higher you go in society when the society has collapsed. All right, it's enough already of my fantasy. The next I know is the guy from the Financial Times will review the reviewer. Here we go. Mike, is it okay if I put some extender in my meatloaf? I'm having relatives come over tonight. I want to know if I'm allowed to put bread in my meatloaf. Or will that make me into a Democrat if I cheat them? Oh, God. Romney, please, another. Okay, let's take a Romney call and get it over with. I got indigestion at the thought of it. Keith in New York, welcome to the Savage Nation.
Hey, thanks for having me on. Great show tonight. Well, you know, real quick, I want to touch on that previous Hillary comment. I can't believe that she's supporting a free market economy.
Right. So, look, either she's going to run a primary challenge against them, which is unlikely, but she's probably going to be run as the VP candidate. Because then they got the nice cop, nasty cop. They got the Marxist and they got the capitalist, right?
Well, you know, Hillary supporting a free market economy makes as much sense to me as the mainstream media covering this Occupy Bilderberg movement that's going on out there.
Yeah, or makes as much sense as anything. There's no sense to Hillary suddenly pretending she's for the free market. I agree with you. Unless she's getting ready to present herself as the anti-Obama, and they'll run her as the VP candidate. And then Biden could go to work, let's say, advertising antidepressant pills. He could he'd be very good. Actually, I used certain – let's say he does advertisements for manic depression pills, but Joe Biden, like lithium. He could go to work for the company that makes lithium, couldn't he? All right, I'm talking to myself already. Teddy, it's Friday. Let's pump it up a little, guys, a little rock and roll. 1-800-449-8255. Now that's too sweet already. That'll make me feel sad because yeah, all right, Danny Fisher.
Paint your initials on my jeans, so everyone in town knows we go around together. Dungaree doll, dungaree doll.
When men idolized women, put women on a pedestal. Look what it got them.
you belong to me forever, forever, forever.
Let me ask you something. Is it good to idolize a woman like we did in the 50s where women were put on a pedestal? Because the women's movement said, don't you dare put me on a pedestal. And the guy's, all right, I'll put you where you belong, okay? Cymbal shot. No, 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 you can't do that either. I mean, how should a man look at a woman? You idolize a woman, right? You come from a mother and you put her up on a pedestal. Then the women said, no, you put me on a pedestal only to knock me off the pedestal. Remember the women's movement, how dramatic it changed the world when you think about it? Don't put me on a pedestal. Do put me on a pedestal. Don't knock me off the pedestal. I'll put me on a pedestal. My body, myself. I'll do what I want. I'll strip naked in the gutter. I'm a woman. I can roll in the gutter. I can roll in mud. I'm a woman. I can do what I want. It's my body, myself. Yeah, right. So you're walking with a dog in the street. That's all. Your grandmother was more of a woman. Your grandmother had more of a life as a woman. The Italian grandmother was 17 grandchildren. Tell me who's more of a woman, her or the one with a schnauzer in the street. Think about what happened to this country. You had the immigrant grandmother who had like 6 children and like 15 grandchildren. Now she has a granddaughter somewhere in San Francisco walking around with like a cockapoo, not even a full dog. It's like a half of a dog, a mixture of two horrendous breeds mixed together in some freakish fluff ball, cockapoo. Just the word itself makes me blush. I never heard of anything like an animal like that. I don't want to talk about the reviewer of the books. I don't know what I want to talk about. Let's see what's in the news. I'm going to go to my... Is there anything big in the news? What, he was born in Kenya, then he wasn't? It was a mistake from the... Remember that big story yesterday? Came and went within 2 hours. They covered up for the Kenyan. One and done. How about Red Facebook. Red Facebook. That's my name. Drudge calls it fake book. IPO gives no return. Matt, I'm calling it Red Facebook. Red Facebook. He did pretty good, Zuckerberg. How come Al Sharpton isn't declaring a mistrial? Al Sharpton, he has a Jewish name. He runs right away. He screams that somebody did something wrong. He heard the name Zimmerman, so that's why Al Sharpton allegedly. In my opinion, the reason Al Sharpton went and started up a riot is he heard Zimmerman. He figured he'd have a guy with like a yarmulke and payas who killed Trayvon Martin. Said the guy turns out to be part black, part Hispanic, part white. So Sharpton didn't know what to say after that. But the minute you hear a Jewish name like Zuckerberg, immediately there's a case for Al Sharpton to go running out. Maybe he can riot against fake book, Red Facebook, because he deceived somebody. Literally. What about that fake? Did you buy Facebook stock? Underwriter stepped in to support social network shares at offering price. Trading problems. He did good, this kid. Did very good. What's he going to do with all that money? Like, is there a difference in being worth $1 billion and in being worth $30 billion? Can anyone explain that to me? Let's say you have $1 billion. Okay, $1 billion. After taxes, you make $1 billion. No, let's make it something simple. After you sell your company, you have $3 billion after taxes, like $3 billion after taxes. Now, what's the difference in being worth $3 billion after taxes and being worth $30 billion after taxes? The answer is the guy worth $30 billion after taxes becomes a megalomaniac who wants to control governments, and his name begins with an S and it ends with an S. That's the difference. He suddenly thinks that he can control the world. Now, if Zuckerberg suddenly goes into politics, we're in trouble. What if he's... I think he's a big supporter, isn't he, of Obama? No, he's a supporter of Romney. Yeah, right. Zuckerberg from Harvard supports a Republican. Right. Okay, I'll be right back.
Savage.
I'm appealing to my female demo with I'm Just a Lonely Boy. Oh, boo-hoo. Welcome to the Savage Nation. Let's hear it again. A little more.
All I want to is someone to love.
Okay, let's go to the callers on the Rock and Roll Friday on the Savage Nation. Sacramento, Katie, welcome to the Savage Nation. What's on your mind?
Hi there. Dr. Savage, I'm one of the people that you talk about that walks around San Francisco in the marina with the dogs. I'm in my early 30s. And I want to know if you have any advice, like, beyond, like, should we give up on the men, you know?
Yes, leave the city. If you're looking for a man, move to Texas. There used to be a statement that girls would, I heard, say in the 70s in San Francisco, the women, the single women, were known to have written and said, in San Francisco, all the men I meet are either gay, married, or crazy. I don't think anything's changed. Do you?
Not so much, no. I mean, it does seem like there's other people, like, outside of, you know, if you go to East Bay and stuff like that, more so.
I don't know what it is about San Francisco, as lovely a city as it is. The people are very difficult. There's no way to describe it in one or two words, but you're a woman walking with a dog. I mean, there's nothing wrong with it. I wasn't ridiculing women. I'm saying it's because the men are lost. The men are unwilling to commit to a woman. They don't want to become fathers. And I don't know where that leads. I can't speak for the next guy. They're going to be satisfied when they're 50 with nothing in life, all that sex and no children. You know what I'm saying?
Yes. I just wanted to tell you that because, I mean, just to, like, say as a woman that it's, like, not that great when, you know, men don't want to have any commitments and they want to, you know, party. You get the guys in their 30s who think that, like, they're still 18 or 21 or something. And
I understand. No, you're not alone in that, though, and it must be very, very difficult. What do your girlfriends say about this?
Yeah, well, I mean, a lot of them, you know, it's like if we didn't get married to our boyfriends early on in our 20s, then since then it's been kind of whack. So
in other words, you have to really reel them in right in the beginning, you know, right out of college.
It does kind of feel like that sometimes. I mean, in terms of the good
in other
quality.
Words, reel them in while they're younger, you're never going to catch another one. I don't know what to say. Guys are very different in this generation than they were in my generation. My generation, it was known you had to get married, you had to have children. It was a social requirement that if you were a man, you got married and you had children. So then along comes the 60s and says, oh, that's social pressure. Well, of course it's social pressure. That's how a society continues. Otherwise, it dies out. I feel bad for you. I really do. I'll send you some dog food and a copy of Trickle Down Tyranny.
Savage.
Warning. The Michael Savage Show contains adult language, adult content, psychological nudity. Listener discretion is advised.
Now, America's most exciting radio talk show, The Savage Nation. Here is Michael Savage.
Government cannot and should not control any individual's life, tell you what to do, what not to do. The economy has to be in the hands of those who are the entrepreneurs and the creative innovators.
Yeah, Hillary's found religion. She's suddenly a free marketer. What is that all about? Here's a woman who suddenly is anti-big government. It's frightening. To believe that anybody would believe a word that a politician says. So Facebook is red Facebook today because it fell back to its IPO price, where the shares opened 11% higher but struggled to stay above the $38 offering price and ended up the day only just 23 cents up. But what's most intriguing to me is that the underwriters had to step in to prop up the stock at a certain point. This is very intriguing to me. They're very interesting. A couple of stocks took a dive after this, including Zynga. Z-Y-N-G-A took a dive, a real dive. In fact, a circuit breaker clicked in to stop the sale of Zynga, the selling of shares of Zynga. And that's because this was basically a bomb. Social media stocks are among the day's biggest losers. Online games maker Zynga, Inc. Shares dropped 13% to $7.17 and have been halted. After hitting a single stock circuit breaker, the stock fell more than 10% in 5 minutes, prompting the halt. Zynga is closely tied to Facebook, as 11% of the social network's revenue comes from Zynga. So what does that tell you about all of this? Well, many different things. It's a gold rush, but there may not be as much gold as you would expect at the end of the day. I mean, how much can the stock grow? The value of the stock now is $100 billion. Do you actually believe Facebook is worth more than a company such as General Motors and, let's say, a railway company that makes railway cars? What do they actually make? I have no idea what they make. I think I have 14,000 names on my Facebook account. That's the last I checked. But you see, here's the problem with me and Facebook, incidentally, is I don't answer any Facebook inquiries because I'd be doing it all day long. That's the one thing I don't understand, is that everyone, like, if you don't have a public persona, Facebook must be a lot of fun. You know, you send naked pictures of your dog or something, and what does your dog look like? But the thing is I don't quite understand how a person who has any public persona can be on Facebook without getting hit with all sorts of crazed offers and insane people. So, yeah, I'm glad I have 14,000 members. It could be much bigger if I pushed it, and I'd like you to be on my list. Go join it. Put your name on it. But I don't respond to it. Think about it. If I have 14,000 people on Facebook and, 20,000 on Twitter. So if every time someone twits something, any twit twits something, am I supposed to twit back to a Twitterer? I don't get that. That means you spend your whole day twitting and Facebooking. How can you run a life? Answer, they can't. That's why they're single and miserable. They walk around, in their palm is an iPhone, and all they do is look at this like it's the Oracle of Delphi. They think that the answer to all of life's problems is in this little thing in their hand. And yet if the man of their dreams walked by and said something nice to them, they wouldn't even notice him because he's not inside the little Oracle. So we all know, look, this is not such, you know, profundity. What it is, it's the disconnection of people from people. And where this all ends is anybody's guess. I don't think it's a very good ending to society. I don't think people can survive loving an electronic device. Let's put it to you that way. Now, if someone invents a way to reproduce with an electronic device, and you can reproduce little electronic devices, then maybe there's a future for it. But I don't see that this turns out very well. Bob in North Carolina, welcome to the Savage Nation. Go ahead, please.
Thank you, Dr. Savage. I just wanted to call, make a general comment, and thank you for all the years of enjoyment. I've been listening to you almost every night for about 12 years.
And wow.
Tonight, you are on all cylinders. I have been educated by you over the years, but your wit, your spontaneity, your humor, tonight you've got me with tears coming down my eyes, just ping-ponging back and forth between all these different subjects. And I told the screener I don't have anything in particular to talk to you about.
No, that's very nice of you to say. Let me tell you something. One of the reasons I get up in the morning and still do my radio show is because of listeners like you. I happen to know that there are millions of people like Bob out there who love me and love my show. And in a crazy world, in a lonely world, in a vicious world, in a malicious world, it's very nice to have what is in essence a community of listeners that is like a giant family, Bob.
Yes, sir.
You know what I mean? I want to send you trickle-down tyranny for that heartfelt state. It's a very complicated statement that I just made. We all live by ourselves. Very few of us have any real friends anymore. There's no friends in this world. Are they really friends? Someone once said to me, after the age of 7, there's no such thing as a friend. What's a friend? Now, okay, if you're a member of a close-knit church group, yes, you have friends. If you are a close-knit member of an ethnic community, yes, there are friendships in the ethnic communities. I see that. But in the middle-class white world, let's be honest, there are no friends to speak of. You may have associates. You may have people you collaborate with. You may have people who have common interests. But how do you define a friend? What is a friend? It's a great question. I don't know that it's worth getting into. But really, what is a friend? Teddy is a friend. My dog is my best friend. I had a party on March 31st, my party. I had 50 people there. I get to hear from one of them say, Mike, come over to my house for a cup of coffee. So am I disappointed? Am I angry? No. It's the way the world is. I come to expect it. I've been doing this all my life. I throw parties. I never have. People in California are very bad on reciprocity. They don't even understand it's a two-way street. They think it's a one-way street, and they're not bad people. They just assume you're inviting them to a party you want to, they're so important that they've been invited to your party and they don't owe you anything. It's pretty interesting. And I frankly, I don't even want to go anywhere. I mean, what am I going to do after a show? I'm so basically exhausted from radio that it takes me hours to get ready and hours to recover. So, I don't know, you know, just the general topic, just talking with Facebook, Schmacebook. You know what was a tragic story I saw today? You know which one really bothered me of all the stories that I saw today? Was the Kennedy family is awful. That really is awful. Trayvon post-mortem reveals traces of marijuana. Flashback, Obama admitted to drunk driving too. Trayvon straddled Zimmerman, punched him MMA style. Don't tell that to the haters, though. The guy was being beaten to death by Trayvon Martin, so he shot him and killed him. I don't care who started the fight. If a guy's killing you with MMA punches, you're going to die unless you have a way to stop him, and particularly if he's on pot. So Zimmerman shot him and killed him. Terrible story, but that's what happened. But don't tell that to Al Sharpton. His mind is made up. It's a hate crime. Kennedy viciousness drove her to suicide, say friends. That's my headline. This is a very sad story. Debt, drugs, and divorce battle added to RFK Jr. wife's troubles, say pals. This guy, let's not go into great details, okay? The friend said he was kicking her while she was down, all alone in this house that she built. He was trying to throw her out. And he slapped the mother of his four children with several restraining orders, trying to get full custody of the kids. And to top it off, the superb, another great Kennedy male, he publicly replaces his wife with his actress girlfriend, Cheryl Hines, who appears on that show I haven't watched in years, Curb Your Intelligence. American Express filed a civil suit against Mary in Westchester. An astounding revelation for someone whose husband has access to the Kennedy Trust Fund. What's wrong with the Kennedy family? Why are the Kennedy men so misogynist that they do this to their women? Let's hope that Curb Your Intelligence, the star of Curb Your Intelligence, Cheryl, whatever her name is, knows what she's getting. 1-800-449-8255. The girl never had a chance. She's just one in a long, sad line of women who've been abused by the Kennedy clan. This is some family, and yet the media would tell you that they're American royalty. Some would say it's nothing but thieves, misogynists, rapists, murderers, philanderers, and addicts. I didn't say that, but I said some would. I didn't say I would say that. After all, you can't say certain things. They're considered royalty. But no, the woman hangs herself. What a way to die. The girl was deep in credit card debt and getting hammered in divorce court when she hanged herself in a barn on a Westchester estate. Friends and documents reveal. I mean, how depressed do you have to be to hang yourself? Does life ever have to be that bad? You know, another show I watched on TV last night, it wasn't for long, it was like a few minutes. This is like the geography of my mind at night. I flip around on the channels from Cars to slasher movies to Meekum Auction to military history to Mob Wives. And then on one of the cable channels, I hit like a Christian channel. And it really interested me because there were two preachers. They were both black guys, and they were amazing. They actually touched me because one of them said the following. He, like, joked with the other guy, and he said, well, we've come a long way, haven't we? You know, he said, we've had our problems when we were young, drugs, and they've come through it, and they met God, you know, and then they became religious. I have to believe them, okay? I don't necessarily think that I don't think that everyone who's doing a TV a religion show is a con man, necessarily. I mean, some are, but these guys struck me as they really saw God, and they really want to spread God's word. So one says to the other about rich people, and he says, you know, he says, you know, you look at what goes on in the rich person's home. He said the loneliness, the unhappiness, the drug usage, the alcohol usage. He said it really hurts me to think how they're suffering even though they're rich. He didn't laugh at the rich. He didn't deride the rich. The man had compassion for the suffering rich. It was an amazing, I never heard a preacher say a thing like that. It was an interesting turn of a, you know, turn of phrase kind of thing. And it goes to tell you, look at RFK Jr.'s wife, hangs herself. I can't imagine how desperately lonely you must be to hang yourself. I don't understand that. That is one of the most violent acts you could commit against your own self. And speaking of suicide, I mean, I never get into this topic, but I have talked about it from time to time. I just want to put this out for those of you who are depressed. And I know many, many people listen to this show, millions of people. And in that audience, there are depressed people who are suicidal on medication, and they listen to me for a number of reasons. They like my joking, my wit, my energy. They figure this guy can go on, I can go on. He goes up, he goes down, and yet he gets through it. He comes on every day. Where does he get the strength from? Maybe I'll get something out of it. I know what goes on. A lot of people write me emails. I see this. But here's the thing to remember if you're ever contemplating suicide. Forget about it. I'm going to put it to rest in a few simple sentences. I'm going to make it easy for you. Don't listen to the liberals who tell you that it's a life choice whether you commit suicide or not. According to religious belief, whether you be Christian or Jewish or Buddhist or Hindu or Muslim, it is against your religion to commit suicide. Do you know why? Because according to your religious beliefs, you do not own your body. You do not own your body. It is the ultimate act of egotism to take your own life. Think about what I just said. God owns you. And once you understand that, you will never again be tempted to take what is not yours to take, which is your own life. You may come to understand that you were given the gift of life to use that gift, not to take it away, because that's the ultimate act of revenge and selfishness. But who hurts from it? Who do you hurt? Your children? Your grandchildren? Who's going to be hurt by your suicide? That's my little two bits on suicide and why not to do it. I'll be back.
Savage.
It is a little Desafinado from another era on the Savage Nation. For those of you who wanted something Brazilian, now you have it. Can't hear it, though. They died out already. Play it louder. It dies out when I talk. So Red Facebook came out, and it's over. What's going to happen Monday is interesting. They had to, like, prop it up. They had to prop it up. Underwriters stepped in to, like, buy shares at the offering price. They're afraid it would, like, collapse. Then there were like a glitch, trading problems. So the whole thing is like a con. So what's going to happen Monday? It was like people who bought it think they're going to get rich, didn't get rich the first day. Usually there's a big bump on IPOs. Oh, yeah, I'm on the bottom, blah, 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 blah. And make like 18, 20, 30% on the first day, make nothing. So now people are going to dump it Monday? You think people are going to dump it Monday? Tell me what you think is going to happen Monday. Are people... Okay, did you buy Facebook shares? Are you going to sell them Monday or are you going to buy more? Are you going to double down on the insanity or are you going to sell them? I don't know. It's going to be an interesting day. I think Monday is going to be as interesting as today. This is a huge story. It's my monster financial story. And what's intriguing to me is that today, on a day like this, the book review on my book comes out in the Financial Times where a guy whose name sounds like a toilet bowl cleaner tries to slam me, yet says pay attention to him even though he's nothing. You should pay attention to his book. Amazing to me. What the heck can you figure this out? Up and down and down and up and down and down and up. Money New York, Jack, welcome to the Savage Nation.
Yeah, Mike, you were talking just now about suicidal people who call in, and you've talked some people maybe off a few cliffs or, you know, ledges.
Yes, yes.
I believe I was one of those people. I don't want to blow up your head and say you saved my life, but I think a few comments is all it takes sometimes to change.
Yes, it does.
Mind.
That's right. A little nudge can bring a person back from the edge. But we live in a society that is so negative, and the pervasiveness of euthanasia and if you don't feel good, kill yourself is so everywhere that people just give up. Am I right, Jack?
You're right. You told me I was not allowed to do that with my life. That wasn't my decision to make.
And what's your religion originally, your indigenous religion?
Catholic.
Oh, well, it's true. Absolutely not. And I'll bet your priest doesn't even know that.
Well, non-practicing now, but...
All right, you don't have to practice. As long as something helped you, and I called you back from the edge of the cliff, there is a reason that you stayed alive, Jack, and you may not even know what that is. But when I come back, I'll tell you a mystical story about that in a minute on the Savage Nation.
Savage.
It is the Savage Nation. Well, this Sunday, there's a solar eclipse that happens every year when the moon crosses in the path of between us and the sun. Moon crosses directly between us and the flaming gas ball called the sun. But this year, because the moon is farther away from the earth than at other times, it will only partly cover the star's white-hot discus. And so it should be very interesting. Annual eclipse coming up Sunday. Will you be able to see it? Are you going to look at it? No, I cannot stop the eclipse. I know that many of you would like me to, but I have discussed it with the man upstairs, and he said, no, Mike, that's beyond you. Cannot do it. Am I going to look at it? I don't know. It's supposed to fly in on the West Coast, 5:30 p.m., coming over from China. Then it goes over Texas as the sun sets, and that's the end of it. I don't think it's going to make it to New York. It won't open in New York, that's for sure. It's not big enough to open in New York. Symbol shot. The eclipse is big enough for San Francisco and Texas, but it's just not big enough to open in New York. Not bad. That's what it looks like to me, right? Why is it? So it's the path of it. It flies in from China, comes in over San Francisco, like the small town of San Francisco. Oh, very sophisticated. Yeah, really. And then Medford, Oregon, then Texas, and boom, over. Goes to Lubbock. Never been to Lubbock. What if you're born in Lubbock? How can you have to get out of there? It's like a bad last name. You're stuck with it. I mean, name like, you know, Santa Fe is like cool. All right, where are you from? Santa Fe, Flagstaff. That's cool. Where are you from? Oh, I'm from Colorado Springs. Nice. That's got a tinge to it. Even like Las Vegas, it has like a ring. Oh, that's really, what, your father like in gambling or he owned a machine? No, he was a janitor. But like if you come from Lubbock, you know, like a guy comes to New York, he has to change his origins. Can't say he's from Lubbock. Even Tucson has like a ring, southwest to people. Yeah, Tucson, very nice. Like Adobe's already. Come, look at Adobe's, yeah. But if you're from Nogales, forget about it. It's like No-Go. It's like the Vega. Remember No-Go? Remember the worst-named car in history was the Chevy Vega, V-E-G-A. No one knew why it didn't sell in South America. The Chevy Nova, sorry, because it means No-Go in Spanish. They didn't know why. They sent the Nova to South America. Nobody bought it because of Nova. It's like the Volt. You know what I'm saying? The Volt is adult, but it's the same thing as it doesn't go anywhere. 1-800 for the birds. I was watching the birds. So what do you want to talk about now? I don't know, man. I'm not into them. Facebook, you want to talk about? What do you think is going to happen on Monday? Who knows what's going to happen? If I knew what happened on Monday, I'd invest. I didn't put any money in it. Did you put money in Facebook? Chances are it's going to go down. All of the people who bought it are going to say, ooh, I didn't make a lot of money. This guy's still alive? I don't believe this. Leonard Cohen was a nobody when he was a somebody, and yet there's a devoted following for this old man. November 7th at the HP Pavilion in San Jose. I appeared there once. I had 7,000 listeners. 7,000 people showed up at the pavilion. And I drove the car out on the stage, the red Cadillac. I'm going to sell a Cadillac. It's too big. I originally kept this Cadillac because I was going to start a Michael Savage museum. And the car was going to be like when America's in. I don't think I'm ever going to do the museum now. So I'm going to start selling things. Give it to charity like gorillas, elephants, whales, seals. Turns. Leonard Cohen, he's still alive. What do people see in this guy? Old Ideas World Tour. You mean old man's no tours for old men? Who would go to that? I guess they do. It's a big world. There's a lot of people. Everybody has their own likes and dislikes. Who would think that Bob Dylan can still sing? But he has to. They have no money. Or Paul Simon. He's out of money. He's got to be broke. How many times can you sing the 59th Street Bridge song? So he's still performing. Why does he still perform? Because he's busted. I try to imagine what his apartment must be like because he and I were in the same seventh grade class together. And for years I was jealous of him, but now I'm much bigger than he is. And he's still performing. He has to go out and do like the minstrel thing. You know, he has to like get dressed up and go do the same old thing. The same thing over and over again. Over and how repetitive can it be? All with the guitar, the same thing. And leftist? All leftists, the kids I went to college with, every one of them, psycho left-wingers. How did I escape that bullet? The only conservative to have ever graduated from Queens College in my year was me. So, well, they were commie professors, all of them. Europeans who fled Hitler, came here and stabbed America in the back. How does that figure? I couldn't understand it. Every one of them was preaching hatred for the country and the hatred for the rich and hatred for capitalism in Queens College. Oh, what a hotbed of communism it was. I didn't even know it at the time. It's like a lot of naive people who vote for Obama think that he actually means what he says. Same with the professors. They actually don't even analyze what they're saying. Attack the rich, attack the 1%, and then run to Beverly Hills to collect $15 million from them. Why millennials are spending more than they earn. What is a millennial? That's a new phrase now for a generation. I hate when you have to hit site will load in 20 seconds because you have to watch a stupid ad now. I'm trying to download it on radio. Why millennials are spending more than they earn. There's a striking disconnect with today's millennials that can best be described through Steve Jobs' infamous reality distortion field. Millennial lifestyles and spending habits do not reflect, again on ad, a pop down, do not reflect their financial realities. The majority of the 79 million U.S. millennials, what is a millennial, are either unemployed, underpaid, or weighed down with student loans. Beowulf, what's a millennial? In other words, an unemployed college graduate. Is that a millennial? I see. Okay. Millennial. I give it a new name. A bum living at home with a hairnet at night on marijuana. One in four millennials, for instance, has more debt than savings, according to Bankrate.com. Some 94% of college students currently graduate with debt. So what were they complaining about? Why didn't they work while they were in college like I did? The current unemployment rate among workers aged 20 to 24 is 13% compared to 8% for older workers. So what's that, racism or ageism? You mean older workers work harder, idiot. They have skills. Why would you hire a college graduate? They come out with no skills whatsoever. The same time millennial college students without full-time jobs spend $784 a month on discretionary expenses, especially food and entertainment, according to Moose Sylvania Marketing Agency. Millennials are the largest demographic purchasing new technological gadgets and fashion apparel, and their spending on jewelry increased 27% in 2011. They even start riots at outside retail malls over limited edition sneakers. This is some bipolar mentality here. I never saw anything like it. Who could buy something you can't afford when you're young? While older adults prioritize family-focused expenditures while in their 20s, such as buying a house, automobile, and building a savings portfolio, today's millennials spend their money on themselves, primarily on technology and travel. So, what does that tell you? Where will they be in 20 years? They will be nowhere. They will be living at home. They're waiting for their mother to fall down a flight of stairs. They're waiting for Pop to have a heart attack. They're waiting for their parents to die so they inherit the house. And then there is the fact that millennials aren't often the ones footing these purchases. Some 59% of moms pay for their millennial child's cell phone. And 53% of moms spend more than $5,000 a year per each child covering everyday expense, including the... That's amazing. I was told point blank when I graduated college by my father, you're on your own now. That's all. You want to live at home, you're going to pay rent. He didn't do it in a mean way. He said, I want you to understand now that you're earning money, you have a job. I was a social worker making $5,000 a year, but I didn't want to leave the house. I didn't want to leave. I had a comfortable room. My mother's cooking was great, right? So he said, all right, you could stay in the house, but you're going to pay a certain amount of rent. It wasn't extraordinary, exorbitant. It was reasonable. And for food, I said, what do you mean food is here? He said, yeah. He had to explain it to me. You understand this? He had to explain to me that although the food was there, it cost money. I had no real concept that the food at the time cost anything. I thought it was like, my mother went to Safeway and was like Deitch and bought it. I didn't understand that he earned the money and he gave her like an allowance to go. He was right. I mean, that's teaching a child the value of money. Do you remember those days? I was raised in a community of people whose parents taught the children the value of money. Today, I don't think there is any value of money. That's why money is valueless. They give themselves name millennials. Why millennials are spending more than they make. Because they're slackers. They live at home, that's all. They're not living in reality. That's why they're all able to vote for Obama, because he lives in unreality, too. All right. And we don't have to go there either. We don't know what's going to happen here. Any eight stocks set to soar off Facebook's IPO. 10 brain teasers to test your mental sharpness. Here's a completely different reason to be skeptical about Facebook. I don't care about Facebook. What do you want to talk about in the Savage Nation? We're open to the open mics, 1-800-449-8255. Let's have a little lightness here. Let's hear clip two on the Savage Nation. Clip two, clip two, clip two, clip two, clip two, clip two, clip two.
It was 2010. I was in Los Angeles.
And now, turn it. I don't want to hear Reverend Wright. It's bad, bad, bad tape. That's like, that's just bad recording of Reverend Wright. That has to be Breitbart again. The worst audio in history. The Breitbart. They have like a microphone in their shoe. They get into the church, you know, like a microphone in their shoelace. Here's a nice piece from the worst senator in human history, the most hateful, anti-capitalist, anti-American senator to have ever come out of Sheepshead Bay, the worst man in the U.S. Senate, clip 14. 14, 14, 14.
Savrin has turned his back on the country that welcomed him and kept him safe, educated him, and helped him become a billionaire.
Jealous.
This is a great American success story gone horribly wrong. Eduardo Savrin wants to defriend the United States of America just to avoid paying taxes, and we aren't going to let him get away with it.
How about some of your friends on Wall Street, Schumer? How many of them pay taxes? How many of your pals on Wall Street and in Brooklyn have loopholes that you wrote for them, Charlie? Oh, it's awful. Just awful. And what else do we have? What else? New York, WOR. Mark, go ahead. You're on the Savage Nation.
Hey, Mike. When I first called in, it was about Facebook, but you had a caller, Jack, called in commenting on some of your comments about suicide.
Right,
and
right.
And you made the comment, you don't own yourself. That was very profound to me. I've never considered it that way.
It's interesting, isn't it, though? I mean, it really is. I mean, if you believe in the divinity of human beings, that we're not just like a tern or a shark or a seal, that we are different than the animals, even though we have similarities with the animals, but if we are divine, then you have to ask yourself, what created this divinity and for what purpose were humans created? And once you go down that road of questioning, you come to the conclusion that you don't own your own body, that God created us for a purpose. And then it becomes easier to deal with some depression, frankly. Don't you agree with me, Mark?
I do, and it's a complete expression of selflessness.
Well, I don't know how to put it. I don't know how to go there. But, Mark, I've had my dark moments. I've been on the edge. I've been on the edge of a cliff many times in my life without a guardrail. In fact, when I'm going through all of my writings when I was a young man and certain things happened, blah, blah, blah. I have an entire carton that no one has ever read with a rope around it called Suicidal Ideations. I was on the edge of the cliff. I looked down into the chasm. I saw the jaws of death. And for some reason, I never went off the edge of that cliff. I found ways to come back. It was mainly through religion. I'm not religious today, by the way, Mark. But I came to understand that religious people are the greatest salvation for us because they do teach us that there's something greater than us on this planet.
Well, I think you just put it into a very nice, easy-to-understand nutshell. I've never considered suicide. I'm not depressed. But I think you succinctly put it into a way that can be clearly understood. I mean, you don't own yourself. I mean, I think that is that's the best description I've ever heard.
Well, okay, that's in my own words, and I have a way with words, I guess. That's why I'm in the talk radio business. But this is how I interpreted the explanation to me. It was taught to me by a religious person who said, don't even think about such thoughts because you don't own yourself. Or it was in my reading of the major religions where they teach you that you don't own yourself and suicide is actually considered the greatest crime you can commit. Suicide is considered a worse crime than homicide. Would you believe that?
Oh, yes. I'm 58 years old. I've been through a whole bunch of things, Zen and the various forms of yoga and things like that. But that was just such a succinct way of stating who we are.
Right, Zen and the Art of the Savage Nation, we might call it, huh, Mark? You know, Mark, I can hear in your voice there's a lot of depth in what you're saying and a lot of thought, and it's interesting to me that although I kid around a lot on the show, joke around, I go here, I go there, you know, I range all over the map. At the end of the day, there's a depth to the show that I think resonates with people like yourself. And without, you know, beating this up, the whole theological issue was a very interesting one to me. And the thing to remember is this: no matter how bad things get in your life, no matter what goes wrong, you have to keep saying to yourself, there's a reason for it. There's a purpose to it. There's an experience here. Something will come of it that will enlighten you in some way, and you keep going. It's as simple as that. There's no other explanation, because if you start to personalize the bad things in your life, you agonize it. Let me put it a completely other way. I read that when a martial artist goes into a ring, the most advanced thinking in martial arts is not that I'm going to beat the opponent, but I'm not going to lose. I never heard that until recently. When I heard that, it was a revelation for me. Think about it. A fighter goes into a ring with another man. One of them is going to win and one is going to lose. And the most advanced thinking in the field is not I'm going to beat him to a pulp, but I'm not going to lose. And he pursues his art of self-defense and of attack from the perspective of I'm not going to lose. It's a very interesting concept, but it's completely opposite to the way you would think a fighter goes into a ring. Isn't that true?
I think we lost him.
It's an amazing thing. I got to go to a quick break. Just when the show's getting good, I'll be right back. Savage. Here's another crazy story. Professor sues Purdue University after probe of his anti-Muslim Facebook comments. A Purdue University professor has filed a freedom of speech suit against his school and five co-workers after getting in hot water for inflammatory statements about Muslims on his Facebook page. Tenured poli-sci professor Maurice Eisenstein was cleared by a university investigation into his Facebook comments, which included a reference to Muhammad that was less than salutary. But Eisenstein claims the investigation nonetheless damaged his reputation and disputes a finding that he retaliated against other faculty members. This is unbelievable. The flap unfolded late last year when Eisenstein posted a photo of the aftermath of a massacre of Nigerian Christians purportedly carried out by African Muslims on his Facebook page. He wrote, "Where are the moderate Muslims' reaction to this? Oh, I forgot they're still looking at the earth as flat," Eisenstein wrote above the post. Good for him. So naturally, the fascistic Muslim Student Association learned of the comments, and like the good fascists that they are, they went to Nazi school officials called liberals, and they brought him up on charges. And then history professor Miriam Joyce filed a harassment complaint against Eisenstein. Joyce said, "We have Saudi students. This is wrong. It creates an unpleasant and unwelcoming atmosphere." Joyce said, "I'm concerned that Muslim students and their parents will get the wrong idea about Purdue." Well, the school investigates, and they find out that they violated the college's free speech rules. Then he received a written reprimand for – it goes on and on. You understand what's going on with the fascists and Nazis called liberals now in universities? Good for him. I hope Purdue pays him $200 million for what they did to him. Maybe they'll learn to stop tampering with free speech, which is what the university should be built upon. Good for him. Good for him. What else? Oregon bans Native American mascots in schools. You hear the insanity of Oregon now? You hear what liberals have done to this state? Home of the Braves. They're changing the Braves now. It's considered racist. Eight Oregon high schools will have to retire their Native American mascots after the Board of Education voted Thursday to prohibit them giving the state some of the nation's toughest restrictions on Native American mascots, nicknames, and logos. This is insanity. Now, you know the Native Americans don't object. It's mainly white patsy liberals from Portland who are overly sensitive for their Native American brethren. Welcome to the brave new world of Barack Obama.
Warning. The Michael Savage Show contains adult language, adult content, psychological nudity. Listener discretion is advised.
And now,
America's most exciting radio talk show, The Savage Nation. Here is Michael Savage.
What would a Romney presidency be like? Day one, President Romney immediately approves the Keystone Pipeline, creating thousands of jobs that Obama blocked. President Romney introduces tax cuts and reforms that reward job creators, not punish them. President Romney issues order to begin replacing Obamacare with common sense health care reform. That's what a Romney presidency will be like.
I'm Mitt Romney, and I approve this message.
These are the questions for the Savage Nation today. Is there anything you think that Romney can really do right now to pump up his chances of winning against Obama? A new poll from Rasmussen says 58% of Americans favor pot if it's sold in pharmacies. Do you think the poll is valid? Do you support or oppose the legalization of marijuana? Looks like Hillary's getting ready to undermine Obama and do a run against him because she said that government should not control the lives of individuals. Gee, how interesting. Pelosi has attacked military chaplains who want to refuse to conduct gay marriages. Should military chaplains be forced to go against their own religious beliefs and morality for the sake of Nancy Pelosi's agenda? Now listen to some of this audio, including Hillary Clinton saying the government should not control any aspect of an individual's life. That's the opposite of Obama's control of the individual from cradle to grave. So what is she pretending all of a sudden? She's a free marketeer?
Government cannot and should not control any individual's life, tell you what to do, what not to do. The economy has to be in the hands of those who are the entrepreneurs and the creative innovators.
Now listen to the worst senator in U.S. history, Chuck Schumer of Brooklyn, saying the Facebook co-founder wants to defriend America. Schumer's a jealous communist.
Savrin has turned his back on the country that welcomed him and kept him safe, educated him, and helped him become a billionaire. This is a great American success story gone horribly wrong. Eduardo Savrin wants to defriend the United States of America just to avoid paying taxes, and we aren't going to let him get away with it.
Now listen to Reverend Jeremiah Wright talk about Hillary Clinton paying other black pastors to tear him down.
It was 2010. I was in Los Angeles, and there was a pastor's meeting, interdenominational pastor's meeting, and they asked me to speak. After the questions and the answers and all that, one of the pastors came up to me. He said, "This has nothing to do with your lecture, but I just want you to know this. Please don't think it was just Republicans after you." I said, "What?" He said, "I was offered money by the Hillary Clinton campaign to tear you down." He said, "But I knew you, so I didn't take the job, but I can tell you the guy here in Los Angeles took it. She paid black preachers to attack you."
Here's all the latest news from MichaelSavage.com. Facebook, could be Red Facebook. Underwriters stepped in to support social network shares at the offering price. Really? They stepped in because there were trading problems? You mean all the billions? Who? Red Facebook. IPO gives no return. What does that mean? What does no return mean? That's a big deal. This is the biggest deal of the day. Facebook's inability to make a clean break to a significantly higher upside surprised some market pros. Shares traded near their starting point in the final hour. What does that mean? It means that everyone who ever wanted to buy a share has bought a share. Was the IPO overhyped? The stock hovered around $38, which was at its offering price. So market watchers are wondering, was this colossal IPO overhyped? No kidding. Duh. Michael Savage said it first, Red Facebook. So that's a big deal. What does it mean? I mean, the shares didn't move beyond the single-digit percentage range that they opened at. Debt up, debt up, debt up, debt up, debt up, debt up. Debt up $12,984 per household since 2011 spending deal. Obama's still Kenyan-born back in 2007. Unbelievable. Literary references show description and promotion of Dreams book. Not only was it in the brochure, but it was inside the Dreams book that they took out. How did the mainstream media miss this? Hello. Of course, they're covering up saying that the 1991 booklet was a mistake. He really wasn't born in Kenya. A 19-year-old white student was beaten by two separate black gangs. Not a hate crime. Congress cuts DOD spending on NASCAR. Flesh-eating bacteria consumes a man's penis.
Yeah.
Race-related hate crimes up under Obama, coinciding with his presidency. Protest erupts after an all-white jury acquits an ex-Houston cop over a teen's beating. Riot outside the courtroom. Hollywood hosts another fundraiser for the one, the only one, the one and only one. Here are some of the other stories on MichaelSavage.com. Kennedy's, it's a sad story. I mean, a really sad story of the death of RFK Jr.'s wife who hung herself. Apparently, the Kennedy clan put her in a corner and ditched her. They were cutting off her credit cards, trying to take her house away and her children. You hear this? Nice people, the Kennedys. And by the way, who is he dating? He's dating the actress from a television show, a liberal from the television show. Boy, the Kennedys surely know how to treat women. New Romney ad, first general election TV ad, promises tax cuts in the oil pipeline. He said he would approve the Keystone XL pipeline on the first day of his presidency. Good.
What would a Romney presidency be like? Day one, President Romney immediately approves the Keystone pipeline, creating thousands of jobs that Obama blocked. President Romney introduces tax cuts and reforms that reward job creators, not punish them. President Romney issues order to begin replacing Obamacare with common sense health care reform. That's what a Romney presidency will be like. I'm Mitt Romney, and I approve this message.
Man with walker killed by elderly driver in Manhattan. What's the world coming to when the old are killing the old?
Elder rage.
Manhattan penthouse sells for a record $90 to $100 million. Can you believe that? That's amazing, huh? That's truly amazing. SF attorney Spencer Freeman Smith arrested in a hit-and-run. Death of a Dublin bicyclist. As I said, Facebook fizzles on first day. Closes up less than a quarter more than it opened. Four-time DUI driver guilty of killing a boy six. Most popular baby names in California are not English. All this and more right here on the Savage Nation.
Wait. Hang on before I go.
I read an article on how the economy has affected consumers and that customer service and return policies are really now the main reasons people choose to do business with a company. Case in point, it's time to replace the blinds, shades, or shutters in your home. You take your measurements, you head off to the big home improvement store. Sure, they take your order. But when your window coverings arrive, you find out they don't fit because the schmuck from the plumbing department gave you bad advice. You trudge back and they tell you, sorry, no returns on custom orders. Not at blinds.com. Not at blinds.com. See, even if you mismeasure, which almost never happens, they'll remake it for free. Who does that? There are also over 100 real experts in-house happy to assist. Get free color samples, free shipping, and no sales tax in most states. Plus, expert installers if you need one. That's blinds.com, where their prices absolutely crush home improvement store prices. Blinds.com. I've used them for blinds. I love them. Blinds.com. This is the Savage Nation.
Savage.
Ryan, welcome to the Savage Nation. Go ahead, please.
Hi, Dr. Savage. I was wondering why I haven't heard you really rant more about technology, in particular cell phones and MySpace and Facebook and these other...
Well, first of all, I don't rant. I do expostulations and such, but there are others in the business who might rant on it. What exactly is it that you'd like me to say to make you happy?
Makes me happy. Most of what you say makes me happy, actually. Now, you just made a comment a couple weeks ago.
No, you sounded like a younger woman who was a lib, you know, an Obamaite who wanted me to sound like a fool. No, but really, what are you actually asking?
I'm asking why I don't hear you speak about it more. And don't you think it's one of the major contributors to the downfall of our society, besides liberalism?
Oh, you want me to be a conservative old fuddy-duddy railing against space, MySpace, and all of that?
No.
Well, I'm not going to do it. I mean, I don't particularly go online to talk to people. I would rather talk to them in person. There are those who do, and it's just another way of meeting people. I don't see anything wrong with it. Eventually, they have to meet each other. Where their human qualities or lack thereof will show. I think it's a more efficient way than going to a bar, for example, and talking to 10,000 strangers until you meet your wife.
All right, I'll give you that. But
I'm saying, like, you know, I watch some of these eHarmony ads. You know, I don't know whether to believe them or not. You know, see happy couples. I don't believe it for a minute. But I would believe that if a person sends in a, you know, here I am, I like this, this is the... Like, what would your colors I like, and music I like, and I like whales, and I like, you know, trees, and I like guns, and all. So you meet a woman like that. Yeah, that's a good start. Can you imagine the amount of time you have to spend randomly trying to meet someone who you have to get through all of that with? So in that sense, I think it's a wonderful way to cut through so many wasted dates, for example.
What about the
cell phones? What's wrong with a cell phone? It's revolutionized communication. I think it's phenomenal. I know people who run billion-dollar businesses on cell phones. They can be anywhere in the world, and they're not imprisoned. It's freed people rather than imprisoned them.
You think so?
I know so. Well, I have a friend right now who's on vacation in a tropical paradise, still running a company that does a tremendous amount of business. This individual could not do this if he didn't have a cell phone and a BlackBerry.
But you don't think people are kind of walking around hypnotized entranced by their little BlackBerries and cell phones, and they can't leave the house without them.
Yeah, but you have less time for neurosis this way. There's less time to fear things. If you're on your BlackBerry with two thumbs, there's less time to worry about the eternal questions. This is much better this way. You just live thinking that you're conquering the universe by pressing keys on a BlackBerry. It's far better than facing the eternal questions that I had to face. You see that? I got you to laugh. I got you. So I take it you're not happy with all these technologies.
I think it's making people very dumb. I think they don't read as much as they used to.
Read? Why are you kidding me? They're reading BlackBerries. They're reading telegram messages on BlackBerries. No need for punctuation. No need for any kind of articulation. It's wonderful. Everyone's been reduced to the level of an ignorant rap musician. What could be better? You talk about democracy. Everyone's now down to a first grade level. What could be better?
It's cutting across all party lines. It's tripartisanship.
So have you tried to find a mate on one of these space pages or whatever?
Oh, I don't know. I met my husband in a bar, and we've been married for...
Oh, okay. Thank you for the low blow. Women always win. But that was easy. I wanted you to give me a good gut shot.
I'm a big fan, and I'm not a lib. I'm articulate, but I'm not a lib.
And you also sound like you're a lib. That's the you could be a great reversal. You could really be. You could do a lot of damage to them up in Spokane. Thanks for being a good sport on the Savage Nation. So I have nothing. I have in my pocket, but I carry the old and the new technology in my pocket. I have, of course, a cell phone. It's people laugh at it. The young ones snicker. Look at that man with a fat cell phone. You know, they think slimmer makes them smarter. I love it. I just love it. What I love is you go into a hotel lobby where there's a bar, which I will do on occasion in San Francisco, and you see the poor young people, they're staring into their palm as though it's sort of a crystal ball. And in this crystal ball is all of their future and all of their hopes and dreams are tied up in their hand. And, of course, everyone's pretending that they're meeting someone there and that they just showed up a little early, even though they're looking for someone. And the chances of them meeting someone are diminished by the fact that they're not looking at anyone while they're really looking for someone, because they're looking into the palm of their hand to pretend that they're actually meeting someone. So as I say, I mean, certainly that inhibits the chance of meeting someone when you're looking into your own hand as though the future lies in your hand. I also, as a social observer, every time I walk past a telephone store now, I laugh to myself. I do have my own sense of humor, which keeps me going here. I walk past, like, Verizon, and it's always the same kind of, like, icky, creepy guys that look like they might be, you know, Pee Wee Herman's on the side. I don't know, like tight pants, weird haircuts, pointy shoes, and kind of like freaky faces. And you see women, you see people sitting at desks with them as though they're in confessionals. Go and look at the people in these Verizon stores as they talk to one of these creepy Pee Wee Herman salesmen about their telephonic needs. And it's as though they're in a confessional or in a psychiatrist's office of 10 years ago. And they're leaning over with their heart on their hand. And this is what I need. And this is what I'm looking for. And the guy's like, I think I have just the exact. This is their whole world is wrapped up in the latest thin telephonic device, which I can never understand. I feel as though I've landed on a strange planet. So in many ways, I do enjoy the current society. It's entertaining for me to look at these things as they go on. Devices, sure, I live on the computer. I'm on 12 hours a day. I'm going blind from it. Cell phone, I have a pocket watch that's not digital. It has a second hand and actual hands that glow in the dark, and it's round like a railroad guy's watch. It's a Timberland Swiss something, or I don't know, watch from 20 years ago. I like to look at the time as the hand goes around. I didn't tell you this. What a great call for this. I also collect antique clocks. I don't have many. I like French bronze marble and such 19th century, early 20th century French three-piece sets. Okay, I have a few of them, and they're all running well. Well, this is strange. One of them, which I've had for 5 years, I bought at auction 10 years ago for $600. It was a steal because it was designed for the export market by the French in the 1890s, and it was designed for export probably to Syria or Egypt because it's designed like a mosque. And it's astounding. Both of the two side candelabra pieces are like little minarets, and the design of the green alabaster marble is that of a mosque. It's gorgeous. And as I say, the French design for overseas markets, it ran fine for 6 years. About a week ago, it stopped running. I happen to be in flux right now. I'm not going to disclose where, but I'm going to be moving to an undisclosed state in an undisclosed location part-time. Back and forth. No one's going to know where I am and when, and I'm not going to tell you why, where, or how.
Savage.
President Obama is meeting with G8 leaders at Camp David today and tomorrow without Russian President Vladimir Putin. And that's because the foreign policy of Obama continues to fail miserably. Even Russia doesn't want to talk to him. Well, right now in the Savage Nation, to talk about this is former Defense Department spokesman J.D. Gordon. J.D. Gordon, welcome to the Savage Nation.
Michael, it's great to talk to you again.
So tell my audience why this is such a big, 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 big deal.
Well, I think it's a really big story because President Obama made a really big deal out of this Russian reset button when he came into office. Remember, Hillary Clinton had this button, and actually it was even wrong. The button translated into overcharged in Russian. It wasn't even reset like they had intended it to be. So, you know, if they couldn't even get the button right, how in the world are they ever going to get the policy right? And his relations with Russia really have been a disaster for the United States. I'd say this whole reset button concept was one of his top five mistakes during his term in office as far as foreign policy and national security goes.
Well, is Putin anyone the U.S. can really trust?
No, I don't think we can trust Putin at all. Putin basically got the better end of the bargain on the New START treaty with us. We basically leveraged our nuclear security, and we're reducing our nuclear stockpile. At the same time, Putin is increasing his nuclear stockpile, and they're advancing the Russian program. And in fact, we don't even have any verification measures to see what they're doing. And not only that, the worst part about the New START treaty is how we're reducing our posture. Russia's improving theirs. The treaty doesn't even cover other countries with nuclear weapons like China, North Korea, Pakistan, let alone Iran. Iran's been working at a feverish pace to develop nuclear weapons. And guess what? They're not even included in this New START treaty. So Vladimir Putin really got the best of us to the New START treaty.
So why have U.S. efforts to find common ground with Russia failed?
Well, I think that President Obama really doesn't understand what Russian national interests were. I think he misunderstood when the Soviet Union fell that just because they're not communists, that's going to mean that they're our friends. But that's totally not the case. The Russians are still the Russians. You know, I had coffee with an ambassador from one of the Eastern European countries here in Washington about a week ago. And she made the great point that, you know, during Russia's history, they've always compared themselves to the top power, whether it was France or whether it was England. They've always saw themselves as a rival to whoever the top country, whoever the top power in the world is. It's no different now for the Russians than it was during the communist days. Sure, they may have a different economic system, but guess what? They're still rivals, and they look to take down the United States a few pegs. They don't want the U.S. to be the world's only superpower. Russia believes in a multipolar balance of power where there are different regional powers around the world, and they want to be one. That's why they bully their neighbors, like Belarus and the Ukraine. Whenever the going gets tough between those countries, you know what Russia does? They cut off their supplies to natural gas in the winter. And it's very cold in that part of the world, so that's certainly a leverage Russia has over their neighbors. Russia invaded Georgia in 2008. They went to war to basically show who was the boss there, basically with a dispute in one of the provinces of Georgia. And so Russia also backs Syria. They back Iran. Syria and Iran are two of the worst enemies the United States has. So what does Russia do? Well, they've got their back. Every time we turn around, Russia is blocking action at the UN for having significant and tough sanctions against Iran and Syria. And also they've sold billions of dollars in weapon systems to Syria and Iran. They've sold them aircraft, attack aircraft. They've sold them tanks, the T-72s. They've sold them shoulder fire missiles, small arms. You know, even a month or so ago, Russia actually sent some troops into Syria as well. You know, so I think that what we're seeing long term is that Russia has got the better part of the deal in any type of negotiation or any type of dealing they have with the United States. And I guess to add insult to injury, we've got the G8 summit here at Camp David Friday and Saturday, and Putin isn't even bothered showing up. I mean, because he doesn't think Obama's important enough for him to talk to. And that's after Obama made this huge deal, this reset button with Secretary Clinton, that things are going to be different. We have a new olive branch for Russia. And you know what? They don't even care. The bear is still laughing.
How should our policy makers deal with Putin?
Well, you know, I think their policymakers in Russia respect toughness. They respected Ronald Reagan because he was tough. And President Obama's not tough. I think that hot mic comment shows that he's not at all tough, and that doesn't inspire fear. It doesn't inspire respect in Moscow. I remember he had that hot mic comment with President Dmitry Medvedev, where he said, well, we'll have more flexibility on our missile defense posture after the elections. And so what's that mean? Well, he sides with Russian interests more than the interests of the U.S. voters. So I think U.S. policymakers need to be really tough with Russia. They need to demand concessions, and they need to hold them accountable. I think that they shouldn't tolerate Russia bullying their neighbors. I think that policymakers shouldn't try to give away the farm just to curry favor with the Russians, which is what Obama essentially did with the New START treaty. And I think we should pressure them to help exert their influence on Iran and Syria, and they should stop selling them weapons as well.
Well, really, look, let's face it, Russia is very important, and we've screwed this one up under the Obama administration. So what should be done?
Our relationship is pretty critical because Russia is one of the world powers, but I think that we've allowed them to push us around since Obama's been in office, and it's really a shame because if you look at the legacy of the Cold War, I mean, we had decades and decades of presidents trying to assert our influence to ensure we came out on top. President Reagan pushed us over the top. We were able to win the Cold War, and all of that that superiority we've been able to leverage over the Russians throughout the Cold War, we're now losing it. Because now Russia's getting stronger, we're getting weaker, our economy's getting weaker, and it's because of the worldview that I would say President Obama brings to the table. Obama thinks of a world where he's very anti-colonial. He thinks of as the U.S. is just one nation among many, that we're not an exceptional nation. That's why he's apologized for us around the world. And so what we're seeing is Russia basically saying, taking advantage of this. They're saying, well, let's see, if the United States is not going to exert leadership, we will. We'll fill the vacuum. And so to me, that's very scary. And I think we just need to be more tough with Russia. I don't think President Obama is going to get that done during his term.
Look, Russia and China are modernizing their nuclear stockpile. Shouldn't we be doing the same?
We should be doing the same. In fact, it's very disturbing to me because President Obama just thinks, well, we have too many nukes. So you know what? Now Russia has this tremendous advantage in tactical nuclear weapons, and we're not modernizing. Basically, Obama just thinks that, well, if everybody got rid of nuclear weapons, then it'd be such a safe place. It reminds me of things people would say when I was in college or high school. Students would talk that way. Well, if the world just didn't have nuclear weapons, wouldn't it be a great place? Well, yeah, it would be. But guess what? North Korea, Russia, China, Iran, they don't share our values. And they don't. They certainly don't share that optimistic utopian world order vision. They think whoever the toughest is going to win the day, because that's how the world is. And Obama just doesn't see the world that way. I think he going back to his book, The Dreams of My Father, he thinks of the world as a place where all the countries should be equal, and that the U.S. should just lead the way to disarm, and so we could just have a peaceful world. But that's fantasy land.
Well, what would Romney be doing differently than Obama when it comes to Russia?
Well, I think Governor Romney's already addressed Russia a few different times, and he'd be a much tougher leader. You know, he's already said things like, he's not in favor of this New START treaty. He would modernize our nuclear posture, our nuclear stockpiles. He would take missile defense seriously. You'd never catch Governor Romney saying things like, just wait till after the elections. I'll have more flexibility to leverage away U.S. security. He would never do anything like that. So Governor Romney would be a lot stronger of a president when it comes to Russia and, frankly, when it comes to foreign policy in general.
J.D. Gordon, thanks for joining us today on the Savage Nation.
Michael, it was great to talk to you again today. Thanks a lot for having me on the show.
I'm Michael Savage. We'll be right back.
Savage.
But you can't play that song on this show. Gloria Allred's liable to sue the rock and rollers who sang Little Girl of Mine. I mean, that is demeaning to a woman. I mean, to call a woman Little Girl of Mine in a song, that's unheard of. How dare you? I think she should find that she should disinter the owner of that record company. And if any of those men who sang that despicable song, Little Girl of Mine, are living in a nursing home, seek them out. Break them over your knee. We can't have Little Girl of Mine in this country. That is demeaning. You get some strange callers in this business, I got to tell you. I don't know what's coming next. I just don't know. You don't know who's going to call next, but you're invited to be that who at 1-800-449-8255. It's the one and only Savage Nation, surviving the turbulence of the times, riding the white water with all of you. Oh, this is really rough. This is white water. This is the white water of radio. These are the white water days of talk radio that I'm in. We're going down the canyon as fast as possible. And so far, the canoe is holding its own. I don't know who's going to call next or what's going to come up. The guy called me earlier and talked about slime in the meat. He said he doesn't care. He likes slime in the meat. It's unbelievable. I don't know who's going to call next. It could be a caller from the deepest reaches of Connecticut or Vermont. By cracky, Doc Savage, you're a heck of a guy. Doc Savage, I have a question for you. You're such a brilliant guy. What kind of tooth powder should I be using now? See, back in 41, I was using that Colgate. It was made from a bitumate, a certain bisulfite product. But, well, during the war, they seized it all up for that gunpowder. Well, then after the war, after Elmer's remains came home, we shifted over to a chlorine-based tooth powder. And I got to tell you, I noticed a change in my rabbits right away. I saw them rabbits change their behavior. You, Doc Savage, I want to know if it was that chlorine-based tooth powder. Oh, God. You know, laughter is the best medicine for our linguistic and cultural divide here in America. Laughter is the best medicine for America's linguistic and cultural divide. I apologize if I did not speak in the aphorisms that you used to, but this is the best I can do given the situation that we're living in now. Oh, yeah. Who knows? Who's going to call next? I don't know. It's an interesting topic. Look what I found for you. See, now you're going to get a shocker. You're going to get a treat now. If you're a regular listener, let's say you're listening on and off and you never missed a show in 16 years, and I mean every hour and every minute and every day, even when you were incarcerated for DUI, you somehow had an earphone. Right? I've been going through my archives because I told you I'm writing a book about my childhood stories and I'm looking for stories and this. I was back in 1965. I was the assistant editor of a little literary magazine called Exit, Urbi et Orbi. Now, I found these magazines. They're worth a fortune because these are the original magazines. There were only four of them. I remember we got a big write-up in the New Yorker or the New York Times as one of the best little magazines of its time. And I was thrilled. I was working with some brilliant young guys in New York. They were really wonderful people. I don't even know where they went. You know, I never kept in touch with them. But I wrote an article in 1965 entitled, Who Is at the Helm? And I'm going to read it to you in part now. You ready for this? Because if this doesn't apply to what's going on in the country today, I don't know what does. Who Is at the Helm by Michael. Here it is. It's a short essay. You want me to read it? Yes or no? Raise your hands in the audience. It's 2 pages long. The next article is Malcolm X. His interview over New York station WBAI-FM with Harry Ring was broadcast January 28, 1965, less than a month before his death. See, you don't realize how diverse my background really is. You could easily typecast people, and you're going to lose an awful lot with your prejudging. That's called prejudice. See, the word prejudice means prejudge. So if you're prejudging me, you're losing an awful lot. So let me read Who Was at the Helm from 1965, and here it goes. Recently it was brought to my attention that Bertrand Russell and a large body of intellectuals delivered a signed article to the British press which said that mankind must immediately undertake to find new sources for its food supply. The group insisted that, should we not immediately act upon this call, we shall find ourselves a species without nourishment. And immediate action was undertaken by the officials in charge. The article was suppressed and appeared in but 2 British newspapers. The situation related above is indicative of a major problem of mankind. We as a species have not yet insisted that our leaders be men of mind and vision, brains. Imagine then that we, you and I, are cells in a great creature, that is to say one being, mankind, a being that has the basic problems of procuring food and shelter, in addition to the natural obstacles that are common to all living organisms. Then I would like to compare the activities of the mankind creature to those of a simple sea creature and see how each faces the basic problems of living. Perhaps then we, the quote, advanced creature, will be able to see why we have not yet established the sane order of survival for our species. And I went on to compare us to the hydra, a certain type of jellyfish. It's a tiny sea creature with a half-inch body that is excellent for studying because you can observe its activities on a cellular level. And I said, when faced with an enemy, the hydra calls upon cells that are specially equipped for its protection. These cells, the nematoblasts, enclose stinging capsules that have a barbed process of cytoplasm shaped much like a spear. Thus, the problem of defense is met without confusion as to which group of cells is to react. The nematoblasts, which are obviously evolved for the job of defense, are signaled by the creature's nerve network and they act. No helter-skeltering of indecision, just decisive action. You see where I'm going with this article? And it wasn't to discuss the merits of our military system that I did this. It was to show you that there was a certain order within a cell, a simple creature like the hydra, defense cells, etc., inside the simple organism. And then I was talking about we as mankind. And I concluded by saying, just as the hydra survives because its functions are well directed by a nerve network, so must the survival of mankind be directed by a network of minds. Those men who have mastered the powers of the intellect should be duty-bound to serve as brain tissue for the creature called mankind. You see what I'm getting at here? So what am I saying to you? Do you actually believe that conniving, devious, deceitful politicians should serve as our brain tissue? Do you think that the meanest, most devious minds of our generation are equipped to preserve us as a species on this planet? Do you think that men who might have evolved to be butchers, but instead are politicians, are the best to save this planet and save the people? What am I seeking? I'm seeking peace and harmony. What do you think I really want in the world? If you actually analyze what you do every day, what you really want is peace and harmony. You want to be left alone to lead your own life the way you best want to lead it, right? Do you want thought control? Do you want big sis monitoring you? Do you want surveillance cameras on every corner under the guise of anti-terrorism? Do you want degenerates to strip search you in an airport and tell you they're doing it for your safety? No, you don't want any of that. But we're impotent. We're impotent because our mental adolescence, the mental adolescence of our time, have taken over our life. And frankly, they're self-destructive. And it's all based upon their egotism and their power madness. And I said, I'm going to conclude now. You ready for the conclusion? I wrote this one a long time ago when I was a very, very young guy. Immediately and without delay, instead of adolescent war games, we would undertake those problems which are most basic to our needs as a species. If we continue to be directed without the benefit of our most advanced minds, continuing to follow unreasoning instinct, we will ultimately wipe ourselves from this planet, wrote Michael in the year 1965 in his essay called Who Was at the Helm. So if you listen to what I just said to you, I just dug this up out of the archives. It's hard to believe. I've really been very political for my entire writing career and my entire broadcasting career. In other words, long before I was political in a broadcast sphere, I was political in a written sphere, and I didn't even know it. All of my health books, all of my books on nutrition, herbal medicine, homeopathy, etc., are very political, because what I was trying to do was awaken the American people to a healthier way of living. Healthier foods, healthier diet, vitamins, minerals, nutrients, herbs. I was 30 years ahead of my time. And it's interesting to me that the, quote, liberals of today, the progressives of today, are the most anti-health food, anti-vitamin segment of our society. Isn't it odd that conservatives seem to love those who raise organic food? The conservatives love pure foods and pure drugs. The conservatives love the vitamin industry, and it's the arch progressives, and I'll name them, Waxman, for example, Nostrelman from Southern California, who is the most anti-vitamin congressman in American history. He hates the vitamin industry. Doesn't want you to have control over your own health and your own body. Works like a street corner hustler for the pharmaceutical industry, in my opinion, trying to legislate vitamins out of your control so that you won't even be able to buy a vitamin tablet.